Welcome to episode 44 of Mancy, a podcast about magic and its influence on our culture. In each set of episodes, we cover a different Mancy or method of magic. I'm RJ Walker. I'm a spoken word artist and writer. With me is my co-host, Elle.
I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch.
Also joining us is Spectre, a professional inspector, and Kitty Cat. He's my cat.
I wanted him to meow. I don't think we're going to get it.
if you shake the treat bag and do not give him treats, he will demand of you. We'll see.
We'll see.
This is his first time in the recording studio. He has recorded things with me before, like when I'm doing voiceover and audiobooks. When I first started doing voiceover work, I was narrating an audiobook. I think it was called War Kids, about like children dying in Syria. And Spectre was outside of my door meowing at me.
In his, like, his annoying meow?
Yeah, where he just really wanted to get into the recording studio because obviously I was
doing
in there.
Doing something fun.
I was in there talking, and that means that there's people, and that means there's people that can give him attention. But I was so into the script that I didn't hear him meowing. And then when I was editing it, I was like in the living room and I heard meows and I was like, oh, it's probably Spectre, you know, in another room meowing. No, it was on the recording. So the author got back to me and was like, do you have a cat? And I was like,
are you helping?
Yeah, he has to be part of the production, I guess.
Spectre is a very, like, social cat that needs to hang out where the people are, which is a problem with my dog, who also needs to hang out where the people are. We have many fights. Spectre is mad because he thinks I didn't give him treats, but I did. They're on the table.
Oh, well, he will find them. Inspector Spectre will find them.
Why do we have Spectre in the studio today?
Because we're going to be talking about cats.
Cats?
What the fuck is up with them little shits?
Meow. Yeah.
We love them. I know we love them. I love my little buddy Spectre here. But this like mythology that we have built around them is very fascinating. They have like such a bizarre narrative compared to other animals, like dogs. Dogs are fairly straightforward. We domesticated them to serve as beasts of burden for various useful tasks. We selectively bred them to complete those tasks. Hound dogs are for tracking. French bulldogs have high body temperatures to keep sleeping soldiers warm during the winter. I don't know if y'all knew that, but that's what French bulldogs are apparently for, to sleep with you,
honestly,
keep you warm.
Honestly, they would be the perfect size for a... Like a hot water bottle. Sorry, I was really far away from the mic because I wanted Spectre to cuddle me.
They're a little space heater.
Yeah.
French bulldogs are apparently a little space heater for French soldiers. And then pugs. Pugs are supposed to have a Chinese emperor's name spelled on their forehead wrinkles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's very terrible what we have done to pugs, and God will never forgive us.
Just pugs, though?
I mean dogs in general, but pugs especially. Like, in the list of crimes humanity has committed against animals, pugs are pretty up there. And I know y'all love pugs. What the fuck was that? Holy shit. Yeah, God is angry.
This is it.
God is angry.
This is... the heat. They just
turned
on the heat.
Oh, my God. They just turned on the heater in our office. It is snowing in Salt Lake City right now.
Yeah, it's snowing.
And it is October. Usually snows in October, though. So that's fairly normal, but pretty early in the season. Anyway, we'll cover dogs in another episode because they're fascinating. Especially the pug forehead wrinkle thing is a crazy story. But the story surrounding cats is a little more vague.
Okay.
We didn't domesticate cats. Cats domesticated themselves. Like, cats chose us.
Yeah.
Which is a very different story from dogs, which were like, these humans seem nice, and now, like, you know, tens of thousands of years later,
totally
they're dressed in little outfits.
Yeah.
And literally, like, the selective breeding we have done to dogs... Some of them are like perpetually hungry. Like your dog is perpetually hungry.
Yeah, he will always eat. Always.
As a result of the selective breeding humans have done.
Well, he's also, he's food motivated. And so we've used like food and toys as like training. And so you don't know this, but every time he begs from you, he's training you to like him more.
Mm. Yeah. lots of dogs are apparently like that because of what we have done to them. Imagine being perpetually hungry. Terrible, terrible fate.
I don't know if you're hungry so much as like you think you always have to have food.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a different thing because Rocco definitely gets full. Like he won't eat anymore at certain points.
Anyway, cats.
Cats.
They were worshipped as gods. It's widely believed that they have a connection to the occult and the divine. They're bad luck. They're good luck. They're cute and cuddly. They're genocidal apex predators. They're a blessing from the gods, or they're the familiars of witches and hosts for demons. People often become obsessed with them to an unhealthy degree, like in the trope with the crazy cat lady. And of course, cats themselves are used for spells and divination. You gotta just relax.
No, I want him. Well, he's getting pets from me. And so.
You're like shifting around in your chair, like making
waggly noises?
Fingers. Yeah.
Oh.
You're like really excited about Spectre being in the office.
Listen, I didn't want to work today. That was not on my, like, I got up and I was like, I guess I have to like take a whole fucking shower. Like I have to like do the whole thing. And then it was like snowing and I was like, I don't fucking want to go to work. And I was like, no, I'm going to go to work. It's going to be fine. And I like talked to myself. I was like, I have 3 readings to do today. That's it. Like, it's not that big of a deal. It'll be super easy. And then like, As the 30-minute drive to work kind of wore on, I was like, I'm not getting any fucking work done today. So I sat in my car and waited for you and Spectre to show up so I could hang out with Spectre.
Oh.
And do this work. I'm justifying this as work.
Okay.
So. What did you think was going to happen?
I know. Spectre's recording. We're going to have to hit that a lot because Spectre's going to be distracting.
Yeah, he is.
Anyway. Cats. We're going to talk about the connection between cats and magic. Alioromancy. Divination. With kitty cats. Very unfortunate. The audio got corrupted as we were recording, like, the first several sections.
Yeah.
So the Patreon subscribers are going to get to hear the corrupted audio version.
That's hilarious.
With like the static and the
really good jokes.
The crunchy sounds that are intermixed in. But I don't want to put that on the
yeah,
main.
We can't.
That'll be alternate reality, Mancy, for you. Anyway. Alioromancy is a form of theriomancy, which is divination using animals. We've done one form of divination of theriomancy already on the show. We did alectriomancy for our first Christmas special. Divination using chickens.
Chickens.
Most forms of theriomancy involve the animal being alive and unharmed. So burning a goat alive and then scrying its burnt corpse is not theriomancy.
Not allowed.
It's pyromancy. That is pyromancy. but watching a herd of goats jump over some rocks, that's theriomancy.
Oh.
Also, we probably shouldn't be doing magic that hurts animals.
Yeah.
Just an ethics suggestion.
Yeah. You know,
it's like, well, let's see. Let's cut open this kitty cat and splay out its innards. Ooh, my next victim should be a blonde. Thank you, cat magic. That is serial killer shit, not the areomancy. in case you were wondering.
Serial killer shit.
Yeah, I know.
Not divination.
That is the second time I've told that joke.
You know what? It was better the second time.
It was better the second time.
But we didn't get to hear theriomancy and me saying animals at the same time as you, so unfortunate.
Yeah. I guess this is more rehearsed.
It is.
Put it that way.
Yeah.
In this season, I plan on diving into theriomancy quite a bit. The episode is this episode. It's going to serve as an introduction to theriomancy. In future episodes, we'll be talking about dogs, bugs, birds, and rodents. I'm actually really excited for rodents because there's actually meomancy happening with a hamster right now on Twitter. Mr. Gox has a hamster habitat that looks like a little business office for his company called Gox Capital LLC. And he runs on his little hamster wheel and goes through a series of fun tunnels. One tunnel path buys cryptocurrency, and the other tunnel path sells cryptocurrency. The wheel determines which cryptocurrency he buys. So it's like a wheel of fortune spin, and then wherever it stops,
and he's like,
we sell or we buy. As of September 2021, he's up about 20%, which is more than Warren Buffett's firm.
Yeah, he's so successful.
And more than large markets like the Dow Jones. We're going to be talking more about that and other weird rodent things in an upcoming Meomancy episode. My point is that theriomancy is quite relevant today. Humans have been looking to animals for advice and wisdom, likely before the dawn of civilization. I say this because animals will look to other animals for advice, wisdom, and assistance. We see this in the form of symbiotic relationships in biology. There are several kinds of symbiosis. One is mutualism, where both parties gain. An example is the goby fish and the shrimp. In this case, more like the simp. That was an ad-lib joke from last time that I'm bringing back.
So good, though.
The shrimp are painfully unaware of predators. And the goby fish sucks at digging burrows. The shrimp digs a burrow for the goby fish to lay its eggs. And if there's a predator, the goby fish slaps the shrimp with its tail, letting it know that it needs to run away.
And this is why they're simps.
This is why it's
the simp. They built a house and then they're like, slap me if there's danger. Oh, Spectre left.
Spectre needs to go inspect some more.
Okay.
Another form of symbiosis is commensalism. One species benefits while the other is unaffected. Hermit crabs, for example, use the discarded or molted shells of snails for their own homes. The hermit crab doesn't hurt the snail in order to get the shell. Lately, though, it's humans that are in a commensalist relationship with hermit crabs.
The hermit crabs wait until the snails die. That's how they get the shell. Just to, like, clarify that.
They just wait around. Like, the sharpest weapon is time.
No, like, hermit crabs actually, given the choice, they will trade shells every day. Like, if there are enough – I've had hermit crabs in, like, a lot of different ways and throughout my life. And if you have enough shells, like, if you have 10 shells for two hermit crabs, they'll just swap them constantly because they want to. So they just find them. And
fashion.
Then make them.
Passion for fashion.
Well, I mean, I think you're going to tell us about awesome fashion choices by them.
Yeah. All the plastic trash in the ocean that humans have created are being appropriated by hermit crabs for shells. And some of it is quite horrifying. These days, you might see like a broken doll head scuttling across the beach.
I have seen that photo. I've seen that one, and it's hardcore.
They've been seen using Legos, pen caps, bottle caps, light bulbs, Halloween decorations like plastic skulls. This is quite macabre. And Christmas ornaments. And whatever else you can imagine. The hermit crabs are living the junk punk future that is destined for us. What's Spectre looking at? Ghosts?
No, I mean, he's just looking at the stuff in the office. He's probably deciding if there's plants to chew on, looking for some plastic. He's wondering if, like, we're going to let him out of the door or if he's going to have to bang on the door handle. Like,
if he does, then I want everyone to hear and take note that this is what this little fucker does in the middle of the night. He either wants to get in or he wants to get out.
Yeah, and he just bangs on the doorknob.
The final form of symbiosis is parasitism. One species benefits while the other suffers. Examples include tapeworm, botflies, and landlords.
And my dog, Rocco.
And your dog. Parasites are truly the stuff of nightmares, eating their hosts inside out, laying eggs in their bodies, or even outright replacing one animal's offspring with one of its own so that the other animal has to do the labor of raising it.
Okay, but that is fairies, right?
Yeah, the changelings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what the bird is that does that, but it's a bird that does that to other birds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, one of these birds is not like the other.
How does a bird figure out that that's what they're supposed to do?
I don't know. Just deadbeat-ass birds, I guess.
They're just like, you know, actually, I decided I had these babies and I don't want them.
They just lay their eggs in another bird's nest. And they will even, like, smash and, like, destroy one of the other bird's eggs to replace it.
That's just so, like, interesting, like, from an evolutionary standpoint. Like, what is it about your DNA that makes you be an asshole like that?
One of the most horrifying parasites is Cymotha exigua, better known as the tongue-eating louse. And there was a recent breakthrough with them in August of 2020.
Mm.
Much to the biologist, Corey Evans's excitement and horror.
horror.
And I put this quote in here that he gave CNN because I think it's a very marine biologist thing to say. "It was shocking at first," he said. "It was my first scan of the day, so that was sick."
That was sick. Dope.
Dude, it was dope. I found this this fucking parasite, bro. It's just like, inside the fish's mouth, bro.
It just lays there. Yeah.
It was my first one. So, like, real stoked.
That was dope.
Real stoked about that. So the tongue-eating louse is an isopod, which is like a type of crustacean. Also, I don't know if y'all knew this, but potato bugs, roly-polies, also isopods.
That's
also
what it looks like. Yeah, it looks like a roly-poly in the bottom of like their mouth. Yeah,
yeah, roly-polies are like one of the only land crustaceans. It's kind of crazy. Anyway, the tongue-eating louse sneaks its way into the fish's mouth, finds the tongue and sneakily like latches onto it, and then connects to the blood vessels in the fish's tongue and redirects the blood to itself. The tongue dies, and this little fucker becomes the fish's new tongue, like latched into its mouth. Originally, it was thought that the tongue-eating louse would attach itself only to predators who accidentally ate it. But Corey Evans discovered the tongue-eating louse in herbivore fish, meaning the louse doesn't need to be eaten. It can go in through the gills and, like, invade the fish through the gills. It also doesn't need to steal food from the host's mouth. Like, it was originally thought that, like, it became the tongue, and then whenever the fish ate food, the tongue-eating louse would just be like, nom, 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 and, like, eat bites of the food before
so
the fish could get it.
So it wouldn't eat all of it.
No, I mean, it couldn't. It's tiny.
I guess, yeah, and you don't, because it wouldn't want to, like, kill its host. It would just want to.
I mean, a lot of parasites do kill their hosts as part of their parasitism. It's like when they're ready to, like, lay their eggs and breed, they, like, lay their eggs inside the host. And then the eggs hatch and, like, eat the host inside out.
This
I don't
is,
know if the tongue eating louse does
like,
that.
This is RJ's, like, creeped out voice. That's the voice he uses when he's actually creeped out by things. He's creeped out by that.
I don't know if the tongue eating louse does that, but, you know.
He does eat tongues.
What they discovered was, since herbivore fish were, like, since this was an herbivore fish, it can live off of sucking the blood of the host alone. It's fucking, it's nightmare fuel. It's very terrifying. I showed Elle some pictures.
Yeah, and it's disturbing, but it looks like if a potato bug laid down flat in your mouth and just sat there and had these little eyes. And then I asked RJ what he would do. Like, for real. One night, like, I go to bed, right, with Rocco, and I, like, come out in the morning and I can't talk. And when I open my mouth, it's just like, meh, like, with its eyes.
It's like Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka.
Oh, my God, yes.
I'd be like, well, we're going to
but
the hospital.
But it's just my tongue.
And at the hospital, they're going to decide if you have a bug tongue. Or if you want to have no tongue, because that is your choice when it comes to the tongue-eating
mouse. I probably couldn't talk anymore.
Yeah, probably. But who knows? Humans haven't had a tongue-eating louse, so it only affects fish.
I'm deeply, like, curious about my tongue now.
Like, it would, like probably wondering. Crawl up and down through your throat.
Oh, no. Ew.
It has, like, little legs. You saw its little centipede legs.
No,
it crawls up and down your throat.
Didn't
to, like
that.
Reach out and, like, grab your food before you do.
Like, when Spectre goes – so Spectre does a thing where he really likes forehead kisses. And if he wants a forehead kiss, he will just take one. Like, he'll just bash his head against your lips. So imagine that. But it's the little louse. And then Spectre gets bitten. Oh,
yeah,
it would be awful.
Nom, nom, nom. And then it gets a mouthful of fluff. And it's like, nah, don't like that. Nom, 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 nom.
I don't think – I don't think I would be able to do readings anymore.
No. Career over. You've heard of the blind seeress?
What the fuck would you do? I mean, you would
seeress.
Write it.
I mean, you probably, like, would be in the freak show, for sure. Just be like, come see the old bug-tongued lady.
So I think I could be a psychic if I developed telepathy with someone else.
Maybe the bug could be a psychic.
For me to tell them. Maybe. So the bug would speak?
Yeah, the bug would be like, break up with him.
Do you think, like, Midnight Mass, vampires, right? You should just get the thing ready to hit the bowl. Yeah. So you know how, like, when you eat the blood of something, you become like them, like if you're a vampire. Sorry, I should have said that. It was about vampires. Okay. Do you think vampires who would, like, eat the blood of a psychic would become psychic?
No. It depends on your vampire rules, because in a lot of vampire fiction, certain vampires have unique abilities, like in Twilight, how different vampires kind of have unique, like, quirks, like sort of superpowers. Mm-hmm. So it would depend on your vampire lore. But if we're looking at traditional vampire lore, then no.
You know, I think, like, in Twilight, they become, like, superpowered because it, like, exacerbates or, like, supports or emphasizes something they're already really good at. So, like, if the rules are that I'm going to become a vampire, but I'm also, like, the best psychic, I'm down for that.
Yeah. You'd be like, yeah. Would you be, like, Morbius the living vampire? Would you, like, hunt other vampires and, like, or, like, Blade?
I would definitely enter into consensual relationships with people who chose to let me feed off of them, and or abusers and sexual assailants. That would be actually, yeah, that's what I would do. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
You want to hit the ball?
So when we look at the human relationship with animals and magic, I think it's important to show the biological imperative involving relationships with other animals. Some theriomancy is about observing the behavior of wild animals, augury, for example. Augury is when usually a druid will watch the shapes like flocks of birds will take. You know how the birds get all swarmy and like blobby?
What does it mean if a crow drops dead out of the sky in front of you?
I don't know. You're going to have to ask an ornithologist because I don't fucking know and I don't want to know.
I'm not sure what it was foretelling.
I'm pretty sure it means that could be a terrible infectious disease. We should probably quarantine that bird and examine it for infectious zoological diseases that could pass to humans. I think that's what that means. But, you know, I'm just being pragmatic over here.
This is why none of the magical shit happens to you. That's, like, not even true. But that's why it didn't happen in front of you.
The birds are entirely – so it's like commensalism. The birds are entirely unaware that a human is using them for anything. They're just like doing their bird thing. And then the druid is like, it's a sign. It's telling me of the future. Twins will be born and one of the twins will be the doom of us all. They must be executed at birth. But then one of them survives and you're unsure if it's the twin that's the evil twin that will doom them all or if it's the good twin and they're protected by a good monk. And then, anyway, this.
You should probably hit the bowl on yourself.
Then there is Alec Triomancy, where the chicken is very aware of what is happening to it because it's a domesticated chicken. The humans place it in a specific situation that they can observe, like how we put the tarot cards on the ground and put feet on the cards to see which ones the chicken would pick. Some animals, I mean, they have no idea what the cards are, but they know that the human is giving them a situation. Some animals, like cats, are so close to humans that humans have begun reading their behavior without having to force them into a specific environment or situation to do so. And now that we have that background on theriomancy, let's talk about cat magic. I know people want me to start with ancient Egypt, but I feel like it's kind of the low-hanging fruit. And we don't go for the low-hanging fruit here at Mancy. I mean,
Spectre,
we sometimes do. What's my cat doing?
He's, like, curled into a ball underneath my chair. Like, as close to the wall as he can get.
Yeah, he found a little house.
I'm safe here.
We're not going to start with ancient Egypt. We're going to cover that more in part two. I want to first talk about Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. cats were Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
The fierce warriors of the sea kept, like, cute, cuddly little kitty cats with them.
I do not think that cats are more cute than they are terrifying or awful. Like,
yeah.
Like, Maggie is more terrifying than cute.
Our roommate's cat is definitely a douche.
Yeah.
Definitely not friendly to people.
Or animals. Like, she
or
just,
anything.
She just wants to be fucking, like, left alone forever.
She wants to be fat and sleep.
Well, you know, if someone had her and they were like, you know, like, in, so, like, come on this journey with me, right? So we're going to go, like, onto a Viking ship, and we're going to imagine there's, like a cabin for the captain. And the captain is like, come in, you must meet the cat of the boat, the ship,
in order to do business.
And it's fucking Maggie, and you try to pet her one time, and she just bites the ever-living fuck out of your hand. I'd be terrified. I'd be like, you know...
You know, the Viking is probably like, ah, yes, get them skunk cat, tear them to pieces.
Exactly. Like, it's totally just a trap, but they make them think it's, yeah, anyway, I'm just saying I could see that.
Yeah, well, I'm starting with Vikings because much of the Illyromancy that was performed would be done with sailors because of the relationship between cats and Vikings. While it may be surprising to those with limited knowledge of Vikings that they, like, loved the shit out of cats rather than, like, keeping, like, wolves or bears as pets, those who know the mythology and poetry of the Poetic Edda know that cats have a significant mythological significance. Cats are connected to the goddess Freya, who has a chariot pulled by cats. Freya, being a goddess of love, luck, witchcraft, and chance, and, you know, many other things. It's a bit of a misnomer to say god of when referring to, like, Norse mythology, because the gods were, like, more well-rounded than being just about one thing, mm-hmm. Or in charge of specific realms. They just, like, were gods that just had certain tastes. And Freya's taste was cats. And so...
Oh, come on. That was... Totes and apropes and hilarious.
I should have said Freya's taste was pussy.
Yeah, you should have. Pussy cats.
So when a bride has a wedding and the weather is fair, the Northmen would say that she has fed the cat well, meaning Freya has granted her luck for treating a cat with kindness.
Yeah.
The type of cat that they kept were called fairy cats.
Mm.
Originally, they were wild in the mountains of Norway, and they called them Skog Cat.
Can you spell Skog for me?
S-K-O-G-C-A-T-T.
Okay.
Skog Cat, which is a very aggressive thing to call a cat. They were intelligent and playful hunters who caused mischief while always getting out of their mischief unharmed. Thus, they were blessed by Freya. And this was the type of cat that pulled her chariot, the Skog Cat. It's an official breed of cat that's long and floofy hair with, like, pointy little floofs coming out of their ears.
I think that's what Spectre is.
You think
real.
He's Skog Cat?
He is very mischievous.
Yeah. They were designed for cold environments, and that's why they're floofy. So many long-haired cats, like Spectre, usually have genetics that can be traced back to Skog Cat. And they were proliferated around the world by Vikings. You know how those Vikings proliferate.
Yeah.
This is why there are many cats are bad luck legends, because cats being connected to Freya are connected to luck. Cats to Vikings weren't good luck or bad luck to the Norse. They were only connected to chance in general and Freya. They always land on their feet, showing that they were blessed by the goddess of chance, and certain cat behavior would be omens of luck, good or bad, sent by Freya through the cats. These ideas and beliefs would be spread by Vikings in the lands that they raided, traded, and settled in, just all over the world, especially because they would take their cats with them. Ship cats were extremely popular, and there are even legends that Vikings would take cats into battle with them for Freya's protection so that I guess you wouldn't die of, like, a random arrow being shot in your direction. Just some fucking archer on your side that's drunk and shoots into the sky and it lands on you. I guess if you have a cat, that wouldn't happen.
Well, I mean, I feel like you know, humans are desperate to make anything seem less than chaotic.
Yeah,
right?
And I'm certain in these kinds of battles, it was extremely chaotic and random chance
and
had a lot to do.
Yeah, it seemed like, if they're just like throwing like an axe in there somehow. Yeah.
There's just like guys up on a tower yeeting rocks down.
Yeah, it would absolutely seem as though have, and also, if I have to die, if I get to have my pet with me, that's going to make the process better.
Plus, the guy yeating rocks doesn't want to hurt a cat.
No,
that
right?
would be bad luck.
I'm just imagine like you with Spectre draped around your neck and like holding onto his feet.
Maybe that's why Spectre lets me do that, because he's Scott
he
Cat.
And that's he's how like, this is what we've always
you'd be
done.
Carried into battle that way. If a cat were to die or be injured and needed to be euthanized, the Vikings would skin them for their pelts and use the pelts to line their gloves and armor.
Oh.
For warmth, yes, but also for luck. So their feline companions would continue to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing how floofy Spectre is, I think he would make a great pair of gloves.
In modern day now, I would never do that because we don't, like, skin animals necessarily anymore.
I mean, we do.
We do, and I have a lot of feelings because I feel like if we need to kill animals, we should use the whole animal. Like, that's my opinion about it. But, like, if I were a Viking, for sure. For sure, that would be like a sweet way of carrying your animal.
Honestly, we don't need to skin Spectre. We could just harvest it from his cat tree. Like, there's enough there for like two or three pairs of gloves.
There really is. I should make some yarn and make you Spectre gloves. I don't know. That's so much. I don't think that's a good idea.
They'd be nice and toasty. The Vikings noticed that ships with cats on them tended to be more intact by the time they reached their destination, specifically their load, their supplies would be more intact because the cats would fend off the rodents that would stow away with the shipments. And it was almost impossible to keep rodents from stowing away. However, the ship cat would take care of them after they had set sail. Especially since their main exports were like fruit, like peaches, that would attract pests. The ship cat would take out rodents and insects, often presenting them to the ship's captain as if to say, yeah, got one for you, boss.
Probably also the cats didn't need to be fed, really, if they were like sustaining themselves off of it.
Yeah.
Like, although I'm sure that the humans were giving them the cats.
Absolutely.
Because that's what we would
be
do.
Like, good Skog cat.
Here's some ham.
Here you go, little Skog cat. This is some of the ham hock that I was going to eat tonight, and you can have. I think Spectre definitely is a Skog cat.
I think so.
He loves, like, lunch meat is, like, his treat of choice. It's his number one.
That's the thing that he will always want.
Is lunch meat ham. And also, he eats the shit out of insects.
He does. He gets
especially
so excited.
Moths. Like, one time there was like a big moth in the house, and he was like watching it, and then he leapt up. And Spectre can jump high. Spectre can jump over 6 feet. And he leapt up and just like munched it like a great white shark coming out of the sea to eat a seagull. He's like, "Gah!" And then just crunched it down, swallowed it whole.
Spectre likes to catch things and then watch them die and, like, keep playing with them, though, too.
Yeah, Spectre
like,
is...
Like, he likes to put them underneath his paws.
Spectre is floofy and he is also long. So he
he's
like,
so long.
Coil up like a snake and, like, jump
yes.
really high. Anyway, I'm sure the cats were very charming to the Vikings. They were like, oh, you got one, you little Vikinger. You got one of the... in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, you can actually get a ship cat that will just hang out on
your
ship.
What do you think they named them? Like, probably things like Killer.
Yeah. Oh.
I can't think of a good Viking name.
Fjord Blood Tooth Bearer. And he's the great slayer that accompanied me into the battle of
the fjords,
and he's straight out of Helheim. This one.
That's only funny like, because Rocco's definitely Cerberus. Like, he's definitely that animal.
And they're fucking like a vicious like cat that's been through countless battles and has one eye. It's just like. Meow.
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 Hands, please. Meow.
But, like, Think about being on the wrong side of these Vikings and their cats. Imagine being just like a monk in the Viking age in a monastery in England, and the things that matter the most to you are like the golden treasures in your monastery.
Yeah.
And then you see this like little floof ball wandering from the shore. You're like, oh, hello there, little cat. Hello there. Oh, let me give you pets. And then you turn around and your monk friend has an axe in his face.
Yeah.
Friar Dingleberry is just like fucking bleeding to death. And you're like, oh my God, holy fuck. And then a raiding party takes all of your sacred treasures. Kind of makes cats seem like bad luck, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So the superstitions in Europe would evolve and grow over time. Cats would be mostly bad luck. The love Vikings had for their cats, though, connected them to heathenism and paganism as well. And soon cats would become symbols for witchcraft and devilry.
Mm.
However, when it came to sailors and seafarers, they still loved them little shits. They were faithful companions, and we'd see the practice of iluromancy begin to take shape strongly here. Not only were cats good at pest control, they were affectionate companions on long voyages, which would get lonely for some of these sailors. But sailors believed that they could tell the future, specifically the weather. The body language of cats is pretty well known today, but sailors believe that their sleeping positions could alert them to things like storms, cold snaps, snow, or even tornadoes. Ship cats would become a consistent part of maritime life for centuries. Their uncanny ability to predict the weather and the signs of it were also passed from sailors to another superstitious occupation, farmers. Farmers would watch the behavior of their barn cats to determine the upcoming weather. Here's what the Farmer's Almanac has said throughout the years about a cat's behavior and the weather. So literally, like, in the Big Farmer magazine, they were like, it's, like, impossible to tell the weather, but, like, here's the deal. Ask your cat how fucked you are.
Really?
Yeah. So when a cat sneezes, it's a sign of rain. The cardinal point to which a cat turns to washes its face after rain shows the direction from which the wind will blow.
Okay.
When a cats are snoring, foul weather follows. Spectre is always snoring.
He always snores, and he sneezes a bunch because he has seasonal allergies.
I don't know. I don't know if he does. He's just sneezily.
No, he sneezes in the summer, like late spring and early summer, he sneezes.
It is a sign of rain if a cat washes its head behind the ear.
Oh.
It's reaching behind the ear. It means it's going to rain. When cats lie on their head with mouth turned up, like on their back, just like, meh, Inspector's floopy. He lays like that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can expect a storm.
Mm.
When a cat washes their face with their back to a fire, expect an early thaw in winter.
Mm.
If a cat licked its fur against the grain, it meant a hailstorm was coming. If it sneezed, rain was on the way. And if it was frisky, the wind would soon blow. It's like if a cat has the zoomies, it's going to be windy.
I feel like, yeah, but we can tell the weather based on how cuddly Spectre is. Because he doesn't like storms.
Well, he's got mixed opinions. He doesn't like thunder. But he likes storms. He likes rain. So like last night, I had my window open and he was just transfixed out the window during the rainstorm.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because he likes the cold wind, which is probably also why he's definitely a skog cat.
Yeah, because he likes the cold.
Because he likes the cold wind.
Yeah.
The old north wind. Some believe that cats could start storms through magic. So sailors always made sure cats were happy. Because if you pissed off a cat, you would bring a storm. Bad luck to kill a seabird.
Spectre. I'm expecting him to climb the wall.
Yeah, he's inspecting the plastic bags and your belongings. He's like, oh, is this where these go during the day? Huh?
This is what it looks like.
All of the superstition and their connection to heathen beliefs through the Vikings gave cats a more occult reputation. In England, it was believed that witches could transform into black cats and curse people. It was also a superstition that witches kept black cats as familiars, servants granted to them by the devil. As we discussed in our alcohol and magic episode, most of the time it was independent women who kept cats because women were the original brewmasters and having cats kept rodents away from their hops. This is also one of the reasons cats are associated with femininity. That and their connection to Freya and Bast, who were feminine deities. In any case, these independent women getting thrown under the patriarchal bus usually would keep cats. Women who were accused of witchcraft had cats. Therefore, cats are associated with witchcraft and bad luck. Bob's your uncle. We've known that since Viking times when they raided our monastery. But with that fear also comes respect. It's like the double-edged sword of like, we hate you, witches. Also, please don't hurt me.
Yeah. Yeah. People literally are like, I'm not really sure that it's a good idea to start shit with you. And I'm like, that's probably a good thought because I'll put you in my freezer. Don't try me. So
here are some superstitions tailored to the treatment of cats. If you bathe the cat against its will, it will bring a destructive storm.
Is that true? I'm sorry.
unrelated to witchcraft lore is the Indonesian superstition that if you got a cat wet, it would make it rain to get revenge on you and get you wet. So sometimes people in Indonesia would be like, find that cat and dunk it. We need rain. A cat could be a witch in disguise, even if it was your cat. So it's important not to have serious conversations around your cat, lest you divulge something to prying and gossiping ears.
I thought don't tell your cat all of your secrets. And I was like,
yeah, that is exactly.
I know, but it was like having those important conversations with people in the room. So then it just made me sound crazy. But
hello there, little fluffy. Yes, we're going to kill. We killed father last night, and we told him it was a sickness, but we poisoned him. Yes, definitely don't turn into a witch and blackmail me with this information. A sneezing cat means good luck, especially in Italy.
Okay.
And if a bride hears a sneezing cat on her wedding day, it's a good omen that the marriage will stay together.
Okay.
However, if a sneezing fit from a cat happens, if he's like, like Spectre does with his machine gun sneezes, then it means disease and misfortune will befall you.
Spectre will straight up sneeze in your face.
Oh, you'll get covered in just like,
it's so gross.
He's 1,000,000% spreading COVID.
Yeah.
That superstition actually was probably true because cats can pass coronaviruses like the common cold. One maritime belief was about black cats, but applied to most cats. It's mostly black cats, though. But any cat, people would get weird. And I like this one. If a ship cat hopped on the ship and then immediately got off the ship, it meant that the ship was likely going to sink during the next voyage. The cat knows and is like, hops on the ship and is like, you know, just checking. This is going to be fucked. So
I'm
not
good.
Doing this. Not doing the ship cat out.
I came. I warned you.
Yeah.
So let's go. If you want.
There's also a sort of folkloric cryptid cat from Celtic culture. You know, we love our cryptids here. This is part of what contributed to the idea that witches could turn into cats because of the Kate Sith. It's like a shape-shifting witch in the form of a cat. You might also recognize it as a character from Final Fantasy VII, which adopted this legend for the character Kate Sith, which is a black cat with a single tuft of white on its chest. The legends were more common in Scotland than in Ireland, but Kate Sith was described as a spectral fae or a transformed witch. Celtic mythology is inconsistent, as we went over in our Irish magic episode. However, there is some evidence that the Kate Sith is actually a real creature, a mutation caused by the breeding between domestic cats and Scottish wildcats create a larger than normal black cat with white tufts that is aggressive and quite elusive. This mutation was called the Kellis cat, and it was thought to be entirely made up, like Kate Sith legends, until someone caught one in 1984.
So, I would 1,000% own one of those cats.
So for just straight up 200 years, they're like, ah, you're crazy, McGillicuddy. Ain't no such thing as the Kallus cat. It's just a Kate Sith legend. And then fucking McGillicuddy is like, then how do you explain this? I caught myself a Kallus cat. It's just all the way until the 80s. You said my family was crazy, but now we got one. Eat your words now, Seamus.
Have you seen a picture of it? What does it look like? It cute?
I mean, kind of. They're just like large black cats with like a white crest.
The white part of that is, I couldn't figure out if it had like white all around or if it was just on its chest.
They look like little panthers, honestly.
Cute.
And they've got like really long tails. And they're really aggressive. So there aren't a lot of pictures of them looking cute. All the pictures of them are like, what the fuck? Step off, bitch. I'm the Kallus cat and I will fucking kill you.
Oh my God. feral and terrifying.
Yeah, they are feral and terrifying. Yeah. They're literally wild cats that have like aggressively bred with a house cat. Like, they're not exactly kind cats, but they caught one and it's real. They're very rare though.
Yeah.
Extremely rare. There's a fun British folktale about the Kate Sith. And I'll retell it. This is good. I think you'll like this.
Okay.
A man is walking home when he sees a most peculiar sight. 9 black cats with tufts of white on their chest. Even stranger, they were carrying a coffin, with the leading cat in the procession playing a dirge on the bagpipes. The man had no idea what was going on, but still he took off his hat and waited for the procession to cross his path. He knew that black cats crossing one's path was bad luck, but he did his best to give the cats the respect they deserved, because this was obviously a funeral procession, lest they curse him. A cat at the end of the procession turns to the man and says, "Ach, laddie, when you see Tom Tildrum, you tell him that Tim Tildrum is dead." The man nods and then continues home.
Okay.
He enters his home and his wife is knitting quietly by the fire with their cat, old Tom, who is napping in her lap. The man says, "Oh, wife, I just saw the strangest thing. Do you know anybody from the Tildrum family?" And the wife says, "No, I don't know anyone by that name." "Well," says the man, "I was told by a funeral procession of cats to tell Tom Tildrum that Tim Tildrum had died." And the cat leaps off the wife's lap and says, "Well, bugger me sideways. That makes me king of the cats." And old Tom, the new king of the cats, jumps out the window and leaves. The end.
Okay.
That's the story.
Well, bugger me sideways. The idea of our... Seriously? Rocco is waiting for the middle head of Cerberus to step down. Like, he's fucking preparing for that shit.
Of course, one of the Kate Sith rules was that a witch could only turn into the cat 9 times. On the 9th time, the witch would have to live as a cat for the rest of their life. This is part of the legend that cats have 9 lives. It's also why August 17th is considered Cat's Night. It's in the Farmer's Almanac as Cat's Night.
Okay.
In Celtic culture, it was believed that the Kate Sith could destroy or claim a soul before it could be received by the gods. But they had to do it before Samhain, specifically August 17th, before Samhain season would officially start kicking off.
Yeah, the fall.
Desperate to claim souls, witches would sometimes forget that they were on their 9th transformation and be stuck as a cat on August 17th. Speaking of, this belief created several cat-related wake rituals. When someone died, it was customary to do things at the wake to distract any cats. They would lay catnip far away from the body, like at the neighbor's house, play games, tell riddles that were confusing to, like, make a witch turn into a cat, go like, well, I've got to figure out this riddle before I can claim the soul. they would, like, play music, do wrestling and other raucous behavior that cats would find really fun to keep the Kate Sith enthralled. And then during the wake, they would forget to reclaim the soul of the deceased. They'd be like, God, nuts. Couldn't claim the soul this time. Next time. Is it my eighth time? Is it my ninth time? I'm not sure. How many times have I been a cat? to claim a soul, the cat has to jump over the corpse. Just like, you. Spectre would 1,000,000% do that. If I took Spectre to a funeral home, he'd be like, what's this? And he'd jump on the coffin and be like, oh, a dead person.
And
then
hop off.
And then
that would be it.
Everyone would freak out.
Hey, come here.
There was also, in the legends, a demonic and powerful Kate Sith by the name of Big Ears.
Big Ears?
Who could be summoned from a vile ritual. To do that, you had to burn the bodies of cats over the course of 8 days and nights. This apparently would piss off Big Ears so much that he would grant you a wish to get you to stop. But, like, don't do that. 1,000,000% if Big Ears is like, ugh, I'll grant you a wish to get you to stop burning the cats.
Yeah,
that wish is a monkey paw wish.
Yeah.
That is a monkey paw wish. Don't take that wish. Anyway. We all know cats are connected to witches, but did you also know they're connected to vampires?
Are you?
Spectre's like, yeah, I'm a cuddle vampire and leech your cuddles. What's odd is that the Celts weren't the only ones with legends about cats jumping over corpses. In Greece, Serbia, and England, and at least one creepypasta originating from Vietnam, a cat jumping over an unburied corpse causes that corpse to rise from the dead and become a vampire.
Oh, fuck.
In Romania, a pregnant woman who has a black cat crossed her path could give birth to a vampire. Some theories as to why these cat myths seem so global is the idea of cats being nocturnal. They're often connected to goddesses like Freya, Bast, and Diana, who are all associated with the night, the moon, and femininity. Cats are creatures of the night, and so it makes sense that they're associated with the things that go bump in the night. Look at Spectre. He's a creature of the night. He's a dark, fell creature of the night, waiting for the symphony of the moon to call him to the woods where he can feed.
He's making biscuits on my leg.
They're also genocidal maniacs. Cats are responsible for the extinction of hundreds and hundreds of bird species, which, like, if you have an outdoor wandering cat, please make sure there are no endangered bird species or butterfly species
around
in your area.
Yeah.
Because you should not be having an outside cat if that is the case. That is irresponsible. Be better pet owner. Anyway, in part two, we're going to talk more about the relationship between cats and the dead. We'll take a look at the ancient Egyptians' relationship with cats, and also we're going to look at, like, Japanese culture and cats and, like, Asian mythology with cats. For now, Elle, do you want to see what messages Spectre might have for our listeners today? Who does Spectre have a message for today?
It is going to be Kristen, who is one of our patrons. And this is a question that was sent to me way back in August, but we have it. So she is wondering, do I have my priorities properly balanced right now, or would I benefit from focusing on something specific? I am worried that I'm missing something or that I have a blind spot.
Okay. So how do we want to have Spectre do this reading? The traditional maritime way is to observe his sleeping position. You could also have him choose cards like we did with the Alectryomancy with treats and the cards. You could just shuffle the cards too and spread them out and see if he picks one or two. You could also just like observe his behavior.
Do you want to pick one of these?
Watch. Are they shuffled? Maybe put them on the table.
I think that might be.
You have like giant oracle cards.
These are tarot cards, yeah. I got them at that astrology conference.
Spectre.
Can you pick a card?
Oh, he's picking.
Who is this?
Where's his treat bag? Toss it this way.
What do you think?
Okay. These two.
Those two?
Yep.
Aha. Oh, that's really actually quite good.
These two.
I think it's this. I knew it was going to be that
and
one.
And this one.
Okay.
I have to give him his treats or he's going to be big mad.
He's going to be so mad.
Come on.
We had to have a conversation earlier about the appropriate amount of treats for Spectre to have. Hey, they're right there, bud.
Nom, nom, nom.
You'll definitely be able to hear that. Well, maybe the noise gate.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first two cards that Spectre picked, and this deck specifically is only the Major Arcana, so it's only for like bigger questions like this that kind of talks about different phases that you're going through and different, I guess, archetypes that you're in. So the first two cards that he drew were the Fool and the World. Have I gone on like the thing about the Fool and the World?
No.
He's sitting on my cards.
That's the new that's the butthole card. that is
the moon.
The moon in the butthole position.
These are ruined forever.
He's swishing his tail.
He's very happy. Okay. Anyway, so in the Major Arcana, in the tarot, there are 22 cards. They are cards 0 to number 21. We start with 0, which is the Fool. It is the card number 0 because 0 is the shape of an egg, and the egg represents the infinite potential of new life. So it's like a moment of starting out on something new, trusting that your guides are taking care of you, trusting that you're going to make the right choices, even if you aren't sure what the choices will necessarily be.
Did you find a bonus treat?
There was an extra treat. It was a very exciting time. The other card, the World card, is the end of the Major Arcana. And the image represents a woman who is in the womb waiting to be reborn. And the idea of this is that we go through a death process throughout the Major Arcana, and the World represents us waiting to be reborn into the world to become the Fool. So for him to pick these two cards together is really significant, just in terms of like one thing ending and something new beginning. So it's not necessarily that I think you need to change or that you need to focus on one priority more than the other priority or more than anything else, so much as there are things that are going to kind of force your hand and kind of force you to look at things from a different perspective and a different light. And in that question of what that means or what that looks like. The other three cards that Spectre drew were the High Priestess, the Moon, and then the Strength card. So the High Priestess is one that I knew was going to come up because she talks about and represents our authenticity, the people that we are becoming the best version of ourselves. And that's like your big focus right now. And as long as you're focused on that and continually making process towards the person that you want to be, like always consciously making decisions from that space of, is this an empowered thing that I would do? That's really what the High Priestess wants us to do, as well as really tap into and find our own inner strength, which is the Strength card of being willing to battle our inner demons. And that's also reflected in the Moon. And the Moon is this kind of idea of the dark parts of ourselves, the dark parts of the year, which we are heading into the darkest days of the year, which is between Samhain and Yule. That is also kind of the same energy of the Moon, which is bringing up things that we need to face that we can't typically see. So I do feel like there's an idea of some blind spots going on just in terms of things that are from your unconscious that are needing you to focus on, and that focusing on those things and doing that deep inner work and that shadow work is going to be the thing that kind of sets you on that new path and that new journey of the Fool in the world.
Spectre has gotten into a sleeping position.
Where is he?
Under your chair. So I'm going to see what his position is.
Loafing.
Well, what does that mean?
I don't know. You're the psychic.
Well, don't the Vikings have something on Google that tells us what that means?
So I actually couldn't find that chart that I originally had. Yeah, there's like a whole bunch of other like charts now. Let's see. Oh, I found one. Reading your cat's body language. Loafing. No. Not a magic chart.
Not a divination chart.
I found it. Loafing means cloudy days ahead.
I think that's pretty...
Overcast.
I was going to say, to me, that feels like hunker down. Like, be ready for it to be a little bit intense, but exciting.
Yeah, he's not, like, curled up sleeping. He's just, like, in position.
He's like, yeah. Yeah, that's what I have. That feels like that was a good reading. I think Spectre picked some good cards.
Yeah, he's a picker. He just picked those cards. He knows how to pick them.
He does.
Yeah. Spectre is extremely charming. Like, he will charm anybody who meets him. Even people who are allergic tend to be charmed by Spectre. He's a himbo.
Well, Spectre is also, like, an emotional support animal. And, like, I had a friend come over who just has been going fucking through it lately. And Spectre wouldn't get off of him. Like, would not leave his chest at all. I was like, yeah. Are you doing the emotional support animal work?
He does do that.
He's a hard worker.
When I'm thrashing in my sleep from night terrors, he will lay on my chest. Or he will lay over my arm so that I don't move it.
Help.
Hit us up on Patreon and Elle will do a reading for you on the show using whatever divination method we're covering. Patreon.com/Mancy. And if you like the show, please share with your friends. The more support we have, the more episodes we can make. If you like my writing, you can pick up books at rjwalkerpoet.com and my new book at bluesketchpress.com. The Ghost Was Always the Machine.
If you want to get a reading from me, you can find me on Etsy at Laurels of Lux. My website is Laurels of Lux. My email is laurelsoflux@gmail.com. It's all Laurels of Lux, but you can find me and contact me there. I'm doing a lot more phone readings these days, or trying to transition that way. So if you're hoping to chat with me, as I've had a couple of our listeners do, I think it's a good time and I love meeting you guys. So hit me up, let me know if I can help with anything, and let me know if you'd like to book a reading.
The music was provided by, in order of appearance, Hayden Volker, Arthi Vinka, Miyu, and Scott Buckley.